do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Before I get started, just want to do a little quick routine with you guys here. I want us to all collectively take a deep breath. Whatever you're doing, whether you're driving, whether you're at the laundromat, whether you're in the bathroom, park, running, blah, 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 wherever the fuck you are, take a deep breath right now. Release that. Yeah. One more. Doesn't that feel good? That rush that goes through your head and through your body. The reason I wanted to just start with that is, you know, we all really go through our daily stuff. And, you know, once we do that a few times, it kind of clears your head. Hopefully, it gives you a little clarity in terms of what you're doing. Reduces that anxiety, that stress level. You know, and that's something that it's so within our reach, but it's something that we never like doing. I mean, some of you do for sure. There's a lot of fucking smart ass people, intelligent people who are constantly doing this, you know, but in those moments that we do slip, we got to remember like, okay, let's just take a deep breath, reanalyze everything, let it power you up and continue with your day, whatever it is that you're doing, man, and kick some ass. Today, my episode is with Leslie Lau. He is the host of the Hustle and Flow podcast. He's actually a co-host with Sean Cooper. And on top of that, he's also the founder of Finding Space. If you guys haven't had the chance to check out his stuff, I highly recommend to follow him on Instagram. He is based out of Sydney, Australia. And in this conversation, we had the opportunity to kind of delve into some of our personal experiences and how we kind of each use them in our own way based on the tools that we've each been given and use them to better ourselves or you know, just have them, just be able to be self-reflective about your experiences. So I honestly thought this was a great conversation. I felt like if I had just taken many deep breaths. So, you know, that can also get you a little high. So be careful you don't all pass out. But at the end of the episode, I hope you feel as refreshed as I did, kind of like a mental reset. And a new alignment of, you know, how we can all find ways of moving forward with as less resistance as possible. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Today's music is brought to you by Alex Herman with the song Naked Skin. Now, this is a little bit of different music. This is a lot more chill, a lot more relaxed, and makes me want to party all at the same time. So go check him out. Follow him on Spotify. You can find his music on SoundCloud. And also give him a follow. Straight from Australia. I hope you guys support everybody across the globe, because again, it's not just your point of view. We're all collective, and fuck, we're all going through this, man. I hope you guys take care. We'll catch you next week. What's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. Today, my guest is Leslie Lau. He is the founder of Finding Space and one half of the Hustle and Flow Podcast. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. Thanks for inviting me through to your show. Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I had the opportunity, or you guys gave me the opportunity to be on your show a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to reach back out and say, hey, you know what? I want both of you guys to be on the podcast. Today is just you, but we have the other one scheduled already, so people are going to stay tuned.
Yeah, nice.
For the people who haven't heard of your show, man, tell me what it's about and how you got started.
Yeah, so with regards to the podcast, the Hustle and Flow podcast, and As you said, mate, I am one half of the show. And it's, I guess it's funny dynamic that we came up with the idea. Sean and I, we've known each other for over a decade now, and have been good friends. And I guess we've seen each other in different parts of our lives, and we've seen each other grow and play different roles, if you can call it that. And, you know, in the later part of our lives, probably, you know, 5, 6 years ago, our conversations started to change. You know, it started changing from this profane conversations around, you know, whether it's like sports or working out or girls or cars and these sorts of things, or the general stuff that you usually talk about, to really, you know, more deep and open conversation. And, you know, what we found with our conversation and what I guess the dynamic of the conversation was that Sean came from a really hustle background and mentality. You know, his business started as a side hustle as he was still working in the corporate space. And he was always of that mindset, and he sort of had these types of people that he looked up to, you know, like Andy Frizzella and Gary Vee and that sort of thing, if you want to think about it that way. And I was, I guess, the polar opposite. I'm very chill. I'm a meditation teacher. I'm very much into Eastern philosophy. So I represent, I guess, the flow of that. But at the end of the day, we'd have very long form conversations over lunch or dinner or coffee, you know, 2-3 hours almost. And we just, at the end of the conversation, we just say, hey, we should have recorded that. And yeah, like, you know, we procrastinated for a while. And, you know, finally about 12 months ago, we officially launched it. And yeah, we've been having one episode a week ever since. So that's how Hustle and Flow came about.
I like it, because I mean, that's usually how podcasts start. It's usually, you know, two friends or two acquaintances, whatever you want to call them. And you're like sitting down and you're having a conversation. And like you say, you come to that realization at the end, you're like, damn, we should have recorded that. Like, we should have just
totally
turned the voice memo on your iPhone or something, and boom, you got something.
Exactly. And I think, look, at the end of the day, this type of conversation and this type of inquiry, I suppose, you'll see that as you grow as a person. And I, when I reflect back on my own personal journey, it's very much the same. I mean, I've always been a very curious person. But until, you know, maybe 8 or so years ago, I wasn't really, I guess, courageous enough to ask those hard questions of myself and really delve deep. Just because, you know, the life that I was living, I guess I was somewhat afraid to, you know, potentially lose that. but like I said, I've always had that itch, that I wanted to scratch in terms of delving deeper and being more curious about things which were, I guess, a bit deeper than the surface level and superficial, and what, I guess, general understanding and general media and conversation it would convey to me. So yeah, I think it worked well in that regard. We're both quite open to that type of conversation. And as I said, I've always been a curious person that wanted to delve deep, and that's reflective of my own personal journey as well.
Nice. And now, in terms of finding space, I had the chance to kind of read up on it. Yeah, it seems like a lot of people, you know, each can call their own experience, but in your own experience, you went through some pretty heavy stuff, man, to, correct me if I'm wrong, but to kind of like learn how to find yourself in, because I'm pretty sure you're still working at that. You're chipping away.
Yeah, totally.
Into the nice, sweet feeling of yourself, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, like I said, finding space, the way it sort of came about, it was a very interesting thing. And you're talking about some stuff that, you know, there was a very catalytic moment that sort of set me on 8 or so years ago. But, you know, to paint the full picture, I was born and raised here in Sydney, Australia. And I'm first generation Australian-born Chinese. So my parents immigrated from Hong Kong in the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, we grew up in an area in Australia, in Sydney, where largely Caucasian demographic. And I went to school as the only Asian kid, both in, you know, primary school and high school. So when I was growing up, there was always a sense of, you know, wanting to fit in and this lack of identity and wanting to, I guess, find out who I was. And as you do when you're a young person and you're influenced by your environment, it's very easy to fall into, I guess, the trap of being someone you're not and just doing things so that you fit in and are accepted. So I guess a lot of my life, I was playing that role, you know, all throughout school, coming out of school and into even my, you know, my mid-20s and late-20s, working, you know, in the corporate industry, in finance, in one of the biggest corporations in Australia and, you know, doing quite well for myself. You know, in conventional circumstances, I would say, you would say that I was doing very well and successful. You know, I was earning big bucks and I was in management and I was only climbing further up this corporate ladder. But like I said, I always had this curiosity and this itch. And I always quote this this line from The Matrix, you know, when Morpheus says to Neo that he's got a splinter in his mind, you know, this nagging feeling that he just can't put a finger on. And I always had that. But like I said, I was never courageous enough to turn and face those questions because, like I mentioned before, I was very afraid of losing whatever I, you know, I was clinging on to in terms of my identity at the time, you know, whether that was this high-flying corporate, the friends that I had, the then girlfriend, now wife, all that sort of stuff, right? not until, I guess, the way I avoided that is like many people, you know, I did a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol. I even dabbled in, you know, antidepressants for some time. But they were only a way to escape from this feeling, escape from having to ask the questions. But not until 2013, when I was going to see a doctor, it was only a routine checkup. It was, I had no real symptoms of sickness. So I will always consider myself a healthy person. I was diagnosed with cancer and, you know, that really flipped my world upside down. And it really forced me to, you know, look at myself in the mirror and ask those hard questions. And, you know, 7 to 8 months of cancer treatment after that, I started the road to recovery. And yeah, I've been walking a path of self-discovery ever since that point in time in my life. So yeah, I guess from there, it really culminated to a lot of soul searching and personal experiences that led to, you know, the creation of Finding Space and what that is. So, you know, if you would like, I can go down that road a little bit deeper if you want to hear that story as well.
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, I mean, no disrespect, but holy fuck, that is, you know, for anybody, you know, the moment where you're faced with your own mortality, and that's to face that kind of those kind of questions and then not realize the time frame that they may have is, like you said, it altered your whole path in terms of how you wanted to continue living the rest of your life. Now, but now I am curious, you know, like, what were the questions that you were asking yourself? Like, you being in those shoes, like, what was it that was going through your head?
I just knew that I was not meant to be what I, where I was, you know. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I was doing something that I wasn't meant to be doing. Like, I did really well in my corporate career, like I said, but that doesn't mean I liked it. I hated it. Mm-hmm. I hated every minute of it. And it's no disrespect to anyone who does and works in corporate, you know. It was just not for me. And I recognized that. For a long time as well, like I said, I had this feeling in me that it was, there was something was amiss in my life, but I just didn't want to ask that question and see what, you know, the answer might be. So it was really around that. And there was a lot of other things like me just trying to fit into, you know, certain demographics and certain groups just to be accepted in some way or another. I was really pretending or hiding the fact of who I really was, and I wasn't expressing myself truthfully. So those are the types of things that I guess I was avoiding at that time in my life.
So what led you to start finding space? Like, what was the idea behind that?
It's been a long journey, man. So finding space was founded in 2019. And I guess, like I said, the journey started in 2013 when I was going through my cancer treatment, and I was assigned a psychologist who basically was there to support me as a young man going through, you know, the trauma and the stress, anxiety, and whatever else that came with cancer treatment. And she recommended to me that I try meditation as a way to, you know, manage that stress and anxiety and everything else. And to that point in my life, I was 27 at the time when I was diagnosed. I hadn't really dabbled in meditation before. So I did try it. It was very difficult for me at the start. It took me about 18 months on and off, you know, going for spans of 2 weeks, you know, practicing daily to, you know, months not doing it at all and then coming back to it. 18 months overall before I cultivated a consistent practice, consistent daily practice. And that's really when I guess my life really changed around for the better. Meditation truly is something that changed my life because it allowed me to, you know, delve deep into a space where I was able to, you know, sit through the noise of the outside world, any sort of external, you know, stimulation or distraction or noise or chatter or anything like this. It was always clouding my judgment and my mind. So I guess once I developed a daily practice, and it was consistent daily practice and meditation, it really changed my life for the better. So it really gave me a different perspective on life. Of course, the cancer was a catalyst, and it already sort of altered the way that I saw the world. But this was really, I guess, the pathway meditation was. For me to delve a lot deeper. So, you know, I really focused on, you know, following that thread down, if you will, you know, down that rabbit hole. And, you know, I ended up in Japan for a short stint in a Zen Buddhist monastery, which I lived in for 15 days. And it was in a place that was a very remote fishing village, on the southern island of Japan. So I wanted to go to a place that was quite remote and far from, you know, the bright lights of Tokyo and things like this. Mm-hmm. So I ended up there and I lived there. And what I found was, even on the second day when I was there, I was out on an errand with the monk that I was living with. And we were driving back. And as I said, it was on a remote fishing village. And we were driving back from the store, and it was on along this beautiful ocean road, and I was just staring out of the window in the car, and I really felt this different feeling of spaciousness in my life that I've never felt before. I remember feeling that I didn't know what time it was, what day it was, and I didn't really care. Like, there was a really great sense of timelessness in that very moment. And in that moment, you know, everyone in my life, except the few that I hold dear to my heart, and the work that I was doing on myself and the journey that I was walking, like everything else other than these things, you know, fell away, and it felt like a dream, you know? So that really highlighted to me what was, you know, truly important in my life. And, you know, that moment, I wanted to encapsulate that. So that is how finding space came to be, pretty much. Like, you know, that's how the best way I could articulate that moment and you know, crystallize it and capture it in, I guess, a business, if you will. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what I aim to deliver and help people realize for themselves as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, like, in what sense, like, what approaches do you seem like work better to try to get people to find these moments for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different for everyone. Do you know what I mean? And that's the important thing to note. I won't ever tell you that one way works better than another. You know, there are certain methods that I use personally. I mentor people one-on-one. I offer a group coaching program as well alongside Sean, my co-host for Hustle and Flow. I also have a meditation program, and I also do it through writing and speech and things like this. These are my mediums of delivery and what I've found work well. But the point of, I guess, the mentorship as well, more particularly, is that it's not about telling you that these are the ways that you should do it, but finding out what ways work for you. I'm sure you've heard of things like, you know, popular words such as flow and all these sorts of things, right? It's just about finding those feelings inside yourself that will lead you to developing a better understanding of who you are. And then you will follow those threads for yourself to expand a greater understanding. And in my sense of it, the best way for us to do that is to create space, because as we all know, living in the modern world, it's very busy. It's very noisy. There's a lot of information and it's all instantaneous. So it is extremely difficult to really understand what is underneath all of that noise, especially because it's coming at us 24/7 at such great volume and speed.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I wake up in the morning, unless I turn the notifications off, which I've started getting better at on my phone. I wake up like at 6 a.m. with the bling, bling, and it's Google News or so on and so forth. And you're like, oh man, I just woke up. And you go to sleep, if you try to go back to sleep, you already have that extra mental weight on your, you know, within you that you kind of, you know, deal with it for the rest of the day. But yeah. I think it's important, because I think, especially nowadays, it seems like a conscious movement where people are trying to connect to themselves as an individual. So I think there's a lot of people looking for ways to, manifest that reality within themselves, you know, but a lot of people don't know how to go about it. And there's also a lot of people out there kind of just looking for others and not necessarily, you know, guiding them, you know, and in a sense, kind of just taking advantage of the situation that they're trying to, you know, in the vulnerable place that they find themselves in.
Totally. Totally. And I think, look, it's always going to be something that this world will take advantage of. And there are always going to be people that do that. Like, you know, we've seen that in every single industry, you know, in modern times, whether that's, you know, weight loss or, you know, fat burning or muscle building. Those are like, you know, very easy examples to talk about, because, you know, there was a very big sort of physical health movement in the last, you know, 50 or so years. And it has only, you know, started to snowball and become greater and greater. And like you said, this so-called conscious movement is no different. The way that I look at it, mate, is, and this is something that I always tell people, and we talk about this in my podcast as well, is that my belief is that help is not an offer. Help is a request, right? So what I mean by that is, if you aren't ready to be helped, then I can't help you, right? And you have to be ready and you have to come to me, right? You have to resonate with what I say, or you have to feel something about, you know, the way, whatever I have put out into the world. And if it like somehow, you know, makes you move, or it makes you nod your head, or, you know, you just resonate with the message some way, somehow, then that will immediately make you trust me to some degree, right? That's the start of the relationship. So that's why I don't market my stuff necessarily. I don't like put money into marketing or do ads or anything like this, because it sort of goes against this principle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm truly wanting to help you, I need to be able to help you, but I can't help everyone. And I understand that fully, you know? I serve a very specific medicine, and it's not for everyone, and I get that. So if you do reach out to me for assistance, there is an application process, and I need to understand where you're at and why you've chosen me at this time, right? Because again, if we discover that this relationship isn't going to work, then I'm not going to waste your time first and foremost, and I'm not going to take your money, right? Because this is, again, it's a dishonest thing, and that's not the principles that I live by.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you have integrity in yourself for that kind of stuff. And I think that's another one of those important aspects. Like you said, unless you're ready to be helped, you're not, you know, no matter how you look for it, it's not gonna come to you. Because again, you can say one thing, but your actions speak louder than words. You know, it's a cheesy phrase, you know, but it's true. You know, what are you doing? And like, how are you expressing yourself compared to what are you really saying? But I hope, you know, my thing's always been like, I've always had that itch too. You know, I've always been curious to kind of just find out a little bit more, ask why, you know, not be afraid to ask questions. And for sure, as a young kid, I found myself always hiding in the corner if I wanted to. I was afraid to kind of speak out. And it wasn't until I got older that I realized, like, no, you know, like I have to voice what it is that I want, you know, and that's really the only way you can, video game reference, level up, you know, that's how I see it. You know, you keep leveling up, you got to meet certain things. And once you're there, you know, you start feeling better about the way, you know, you start gaining confidence in yourself. And then once you, you know, feel better about yourself, you can tackle on different things. But yeah, I like how you said you know, everybody's with a different approach. And that's true with anything, diet, you know, exercise, whatever it is, everybody's specific to certain things. People need to find, you know, they just got to want to find the answers for themselves as well.
I think that's the key here, right? I mean, this is another reason why I guess I take this approach, is because at the end of the day, when I guide people and I help people, I always turn them back onto themselves and tell them, like, you know, I'm not going to give you the answers for you. Like, you know, the answers are always found within yourself, you know. And don't take it as a cheesy thing that I'm saying, and it's not, you know, some spiritual woo-woo stuff, right? It truly is. Like, if you're looking for answers anywhere other than yourself, than inside yourself, then you're looking in the wrong place. And, you know, think about it this way. Yeah, like you said, in terms of like wanting to actually change, right? Like, everyone knows to a certain degree what they need to eat and what they need to do to stay quote unquote healthy, right? Mm-hmm. But how many people actually do that? Like, what is the percentage of, you know, obese people and unfit people and, you know, physically sick people because of the way that they interact in the world with regards to food, with regards to exercise? You know, in the last 60 to 70 years has been like the biggest spikes in these diseases of affluence, right? And what I'm talking about is heart disease and cancer and all those sorts of things. Diabetes, like, those things didn't exist before the types of foods that we have now exist, right? There's a correlation there. But we also know that they're bad for us, but we still eat them. And we still allow them to do what it does to our bodies and break us down. So there's a big difference there. Like, people know generally, and I would say a lot, most people know generally, right, in the modern world, what is quote unquote good for them in terms of their physical health with regards to diet and exercise. But there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path, as again, Morpheus said in The Matrix. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's very important. Like, everyone wants to be better, but who's actually walking the path to do it and get better?
Right. I like how you said, like, the Morpheus, the Matrix references. You know, I didn't see that movie until maybe like last year, the first time. Dude, I watched the whole trilogy. The first two, in my opinion, were probably the best movies.
Third one was trash.
I agree. I'm hoping the fourth one is, you know, it's a lot better. But going back to the first one, there's a lot of references or things that you just, you know, makes you question things. Like, I've always been in the terms where I believe to an extent we exist in a sort of matrix.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it isn't until we, like, I don't want to say meditation is the pathway to kind of see it from the outside, but because we brought it up, you know, like you said, it's in a way of trying to disconnect from that noise and see the in between everything.
Yeah.
And that makes you think, you know, like, if we really do allow ourselves for our mind to calm down and to just be in silence, like you will notice these little things, new things about different things or subjects or topics or whatever. Like I've done isolation tank. We have one.
The flood tanks, yeah.
Tank, yeah. I've done it a few times, and you know it takes a while to kind of settle in. But once you kind of get lost in where you are, you start seeing like these. I don't know. It's really weird, but I always walk out of there feeling like less weight. Like I'm outside of the Epsom salt effect on my body, you know.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Out of there like feeling clear, like clear-headed, you know, a little bit more. I can take a deep breath and just feel really good about, I don't know, life.
Yeah. And I mean, look, like you said in the reference to, you know, meditation being a like a potential pseudo gateway, like for me it was, right? And like I said before, it doesn't necessarily need to be meditation for everyone. There are these like quote-unquote, you know, red pills for everyone that they can take to, you know, open their eyes a little bit. And what meditation does for me, and I know it does for most people, if they practice it in a, you know, dedicated, consistent manner, is that it creates space for people between, you know, themselves and external stimulus, right? Like you give yourself the opportunity to, rather than react to whatever is coming at you, to respond. You know, there's a subtle difference between reacting and responding. Like think about moments when, you know, you're pricked by, you know, a sharp object and you feel the pain and you just scream, ouch, or whatever. It doesn't really hurt that much, right? But it's just an innate reaction. But we have the ability to not respond in that way if we want. I think another classic example is like road rage, right? If you get upset at someone who's like cuts you off and you start like cursing them, saying, oh, what the fuck are you doing, mate? You know, blah, blah, blah. You get upset at them. But then if you have a little bit of space in between that interaction, you can really unpack the situation and say, there's part of the story that I don't know here. You know, perhaps he was rushing off to hospital because there was an emergency, you know, perhaps he was just being a dick, but we don't know, right? Right. So how can we cast judgment on the situation if we don't know the full story, right? And it only ruins our own days by being like angry because of that, you know, situation. The dude's long gone, you know, he doesn't even know you were upset, but you've like just like pissed yourself off and the rest of your day is ruined because of that, right?
Yeah, your veins popping out of your forehead, your chest is all tight. Like yeah. That, you're just the one dealing with that now.
That's it.
No, but it's a very interesting, just the way that it's that thing that we all have that we're just looking for a reason. Like, is this it? Like, what else is there? Like, I think as we grow, you know, I'm in my early 30s, man, and I'm still having that question. I'm going to keep having that question because I know people that are older than me and they're still having that question. So, you know, it's something that once I understand that, how can I say? It's like we're setting a goal for ourselves. But when we reach that goal, then we're like, okay, this is it. Okay, oh, what's my next goal? So you're like, you're setting yourself up for these new expectations when you're not really just taking the moment to just be where you are. And that's totally. Lost. And when you're lost, that's where you miss everything.
Absolutely. I mean, like an easy, like, I guess, imagery you can use to paint that picture is like, if you're in a speeding train and you're looking out the window, you know, you can't really focus on any of the detail because you're moving so fast. Not until you step out of that train and then go and, you know, interact with that tree, touch it and feel its texture, smell what sort of, you know, scents are coming off it, you know, feel the different nuanced grooves, you know, in the trunk. Do you really get to sense and, you know, interact and experience the depth of, you know, what just seems like this blur of brown and green. Do you know what I mean? It's a very different experience. And like, who wants to experience life as just a blur? And you look back and you're like, you know, what the fuck did I just do my last, you know, 30, 40 years? And, you know, for me, like even reflecting back for my, you know, my up until my mid-20s and late 20s, I have, you know, thought to myself that it has been very difficult for me to, you know, find or even, I guess, see the detail of what my life was like back then. Like, it was truly all a blur for me. It was probably because, you know, I was doing drugs and getting drunk all the time, but I was also just running through life and allowing this, you know, anxiety in me, this modern mindset of, you know, going and going and going and production and efficiency and all this sort of thing sort of rule my life. But like I said, I reflect back in my first 2.5 decades of my life, I can hardly remember anything in, like, you know, in full rich color. It's just like this very, you know, vague blur for me. So it's a real eye-opening thing if you look at it that way, right? Like, who wants to live their life and then look back and say, what the fuck did I just do?
Yeah, man, that train example that you said, that's a perfect way of putting it. Because again, you're just seeing this blur. You're just coasting. You're like on auto drive, autopilot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is. Again, I don't know if it's because I just been paying more attention, but each thing that I'm trying to do, I'd like to, like, just fully immerse myself, you know, and be there. Like, if I hate it, fine, I hate it. But I'm experiencing that moment of like, I don't want to be here right now. But that's an experience, that's an emotion that is real, and it's happening right now. So, you know, like, you don't enjoy it, but you're still there at the moment. That's what it is. You got to be in the moment of what it is that you're doing, whether or not in,
yeah, man, like,
your narrative.
Like, what else is there if you look at it, right? Yeah. What else is there but this moment right here, right now, for anyone listening, right? And even for you and I, there is nothing else that is, you know, quote unquote real than what is right in front of us right now. Like, this moment and this moment and this moment and this moment. Like, there's nothing else. Like, what is a memory? A memory, like I said, you just reflect back or rewind back 5 minutes to what I was talking about in terms of my recollection of my life for the first 25 years or so. Like, I can't remember shit in great depth or detail of my life and what it was like. You know, it was a very vague sort of, you know, worn out painting of my life that I can remember. And the future is a mental projection. You know, I wish it's going to be like this way, or I hope it's going to be this way, or I hope it's not this way, but who knows what it's going to be like, right? It could change, like, very, very quickly. You know, the internet for us, it could just drop out like this and our conversation would stop. Who knows? But our hope for the future is that it continues on until we finish recording this discussion, right? But there is always there's always a chance that something is going to go the way that we don't want it to go, or unexpectedly, right? So there's nothing else than the moment. So people who live for the future, right, they're just anxious for nothing. You know, they're trying to, like you said, that the great analogy in terms of using this goalpost that we're setting up into the future, but we're sort of setting ourselves up for failure in a little sense, because we've sort of painted a really detailed picture of what our, you know, future goalpost looks like. But what if it doesn't turn out like that? Are we going to be disappointed? You know, but what if it's better? So the way that I like to see life is that really it's like a pathless path, right? It's a path, but it doesn't have a path. Like, the next step that you take along the path reveals the next bit of the path. And you have to keep walking on the path to continue to reveal the path itself until the day that you die. So that's life for me.
Yeah, no, it's somebody's hearing this and they're like, fuck, now I'm depressed or something. I mean, anything. No, but I mean, that's the magic of it, I think, you know, because it's like you can hear it and it sounds very unfortunate. You know, it's like the reality. Nobody wants to see the reality. They want to see the Hollywood version of things, you know, like, but when you come to terms with it, you come to this whole new awareness and comfort in what it is to be in this experience.
Put it this way. The very popular saying of, you know, ignorance is bliss. Is it truly bliss? Like, I sort of put it in the same way as, taking drugs. If you want to, numb yourself and your experience of life for, as long as you live, and then you look back and you don't really know what happened, is that truly a life well lived? And I'm not here to judge whether it is or not. My opinion of it is, it isn't, right? Because I've experienced that myself, right? And we also can, I guess, take the examples of people who have also lived similar experiences. Like there's like a meme on the internet where there's all these black and white pictures of these celebrities. They're all smiling with the biggest grins. And it says, this is what depression looks like. And all the pictures of the celebrities are those who have taken their own lives, right? And we think of celebrities in Hollywood as the people who have, quote unquote, made it, in the eyes of modern culture. And you hear the words of, someone like Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was like the richest dude in the 90s and the 2000s, like when he made The Mask and Dumb and Dumber and stuff like this. He was like the most high demand male actor, and he was getting paid like tens and tens of hundreds of millions of dollars before anyone else was. And there's quotes of him where he had his like mental breakdown and stuff, where he just says he hopes that everyone can come across fame and fortune so they can understand that that's not what it's all about, so like there's a difference between pulling the wool over your own eyes and ignoring things, the reality of what the world is. It's like saying my hope is that if I step onto the road or in front of traffic, oh, it's not going to hit me like this is a fun I don't know, a roller coaster or something. Like it's something that's good, and ignoring the fact that there's inherent danger in you stepping in front of oncoming traffic and something like that. We can't ignore the fact that life is inherently going to have its ups and downs. That's the way I see it anyway.
Yeah, man, it's, I don't know, I'm at a loss of words, because again, it's something you can't really explain to people. Like you can get a sense of it, like you hear it, like I've been hearing you telling me your stories and your background, and it paints a picture for me, of what I believe based on what you're telling me is that you went through. But people see it and they kind of just take it like, oh, it sounds like I've been through worse, like people just have these comments all the time. But you don't realize that, like, sure, I mean, you may have it less worse. You might have like horrible experiences, but when we start going into our own head, we can start building a sense of, what am I trying to say? You should be, I don't know, sympathetic, I guess, like to others, like you mentioned earlier, I forgot what example you said, but you start, it was the car, like the fucking road rage guy.
Yeah.
You don't know what he's going through, like you're just going based off what you see, you're going based on your reactions, but you're not really taking the moment to just think back and say like, wait a second, I'm being an asshole, and it's not until we start questioning those questions, or yeah, questioning the questions and those answers based on who gave them to you, that it's when you can come to a conclusion for your own self. I don't know if that any of the last paragraph made any sense, but
no, totally, for sure, man. And I mean, look, this is like part of the, I guess for me, this, it seems like part of the struggle, and it's also exciting in my mind, and it just comes down to the way you frame, your experience of life, imagine if you knew every step that you were going to take or supposed to take in life until the day you died, like it wouldn't be fun, right? In my mind, it wouldn't be exciting. There wouldn't be like opportunity for wonder and being awestruck by whatever is happening around you in life, those experiences. Like and like, the example that you said about, people comparing their their traumatic experience and things like this. Like, I would never say that mine is, you know, more or less traumatic to anything else. Like, trauma is a personal subjective experience, and it always will be. You know, I use the extreme example of, you know, someone, you know, stubbing their toe on the corner of their bed. They could feel that as traumatically as I felt my cancer experience. You know, it's far-fetched, but to paint the picture of how subjective trauma is, you know, it can be like this, right? So it's not really what it is, but how it's, you know, internalized and felt for oneself. And my feeling with that, right, I guess it just comes down to whether you are feeling the trauma for yourself, or you are comparing it based on what people say it is, you know, out in the outside world. And in my mind, it shouldn't really matter what people say it is. Like, you know, cancer's one of those things that people are really, really scared about. Of course, it was a very tough and challenging time in my life, but it was actually, and I tell this to people all the time, that, you know, when I tell them my experience, they start to say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 blah." But I'm like, it was the best experience or best thing that ever happened to me. And I say that with complete honest truth, like a blessing in disguise, because if it didn't happen, I'd be living that, you know, old mindless life that I was, you know, explaining to you before, right? And in my mind, those sorts of experiences are about just simply, you know, snapping us out of you know, this daze or this sleepwalking for me. It's to wake us up, right? And a small trauma can, you know, wake us up as just as easy as a big one. But it's about our level of attention to why that thing happened. And I think that, you know, your story yourself, it truly did that for you in my mind. You know, when you were sharing your story about having a son, a child at a very young age, and how that sort of, you know, changed your perspective on life. It's one of those catalytic moments that simply made you pay attention to what was immediately in front of you and your life, right?
Yeah, correct. And you see, that's another thing. Like, I'm a pretty, like, a big believer that we all come to moments of realization. Like, there's always going to be that moment that's going to be the key one, that, or one of the key ones, because you can have multiple, but that's going to, you know, push you through to the next thing, you know. And regardless, you know, how painful it is for you on your individual self, or how painful it is for the collective, it's important that we all come to those conclusions, you know. And the unfortunate part is that sometimes it has to be with the most scariest, hardest, most difficult thing that you've been to till that point that causes those changes. You know, it's not until you get to that edge and you're like, "God damn, like, did I have to get here?" So, Mike, I guess one last question for you is, like, do you think that we have to all be there at that edge, at that precipice, and to want to change? Or do you think we can, is it possible to learn, you know, these words of knowledge prior to this and kind of get there before we
Sure. I think it's definitely possible for us to get there beforehand, right? Mm-hmm. And like I said, it comes back to what I was saying before in terms of your level of awareness and attention to it, right? If you aren't aware, or you don't have the level of attention required to really, you know, be quote unquote, you know, woken up by the experience, whatever it is, whether it be, you know, just a bad day all the way up to cancer, right? If you aren't aware, or you are consciously avoiding it, like I was consciously avoiding it, right? And I kept ignoring it and ignoring it and ignoring it until, you know, I couldn't ignore it anymore. They were all choices that I made, you know? So for me personally, when I reflect back on it, perhaps I needed cancer, because otherwise I would have continued to ignore. And that was just for me. But someone might have the level of awareness and attention to simply snap out of it and say, "Hey, you know, the way that I'm moving, it's the wrong way. I better reassess and see, you know, which direction I should be pointing in." It comes back to the level of attention. And then, you know, like we were saying before, in terms of your desire and your level of, you know, I guess, drive and motivation towards wanting to do something different towards your life, if you know that you're walking the wrong path for yourself, you know, sometimes people just like myself, like I can't speak for anyone else but myself. And I think, look, cancer was unavoidable for me. But like I said, it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. So I needed it, and I thank it every day. And, you know, I haven't felt better, you know, every day that has passed that point in my life. So yeah.
In my example, you know, I had my son, and probably when he was close to being like 5 or 6, you know, like I mentioned to you guys, our family kind of just went separate ways. So to me, that was my catalyst, you know. And now looking back at it, like 4 or 5 years later, like it makes me think, like, holy shit, like at the time it was a painful thing, you know, it was devastating, I'm not gonna lie. But I look at it back now and I think, like, damn, like if that hadn't had happened, I wouldn't have wanted to, how can I say, step up to the challenge and seek truth, you know, because that's what the thing was for me, like start having integrity in myself. You know, I admit it, there wasn't a lot of it, you know, until I, you know, decided, you know, I gotta step up, I gotta be true to myself. If I want to seek truth, I gotta be able to exert the truth out as well, you know. Just be straight, you know, not be an asshole, but be straightforward with what it is that I want. And that way I can, yeah, I don't know, that was my way of just kind of releasing all these energies in me. But yeah, man, I think it's cool that unfortunately we have to go through those really lows to kind of appreciate the highs and then think back and say, like, man, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't be here. And you realize you're in a better spot, you know, for the most part, for a lot of the people. I know there's...
Hey, man, look, you know, those are the things. It's the ups and downs, you know, really allow us to feel, you know, the beauty of the life that we live. And I truly believe that, like, the example that I like to give with this is, you know, and it's another movie reference, but it is a movie based on history. In Troy, you know, when Achilles says that, you know, the gods envy us, you know, because of our mortality, right? That's the ultimate, you know, I guess, the ultimate quote unquote bad thing that could ever happen to us in our lives is death, right? But the gods envy us because, you know, if there was no death, how could you, you know, use it as a, I guess, a baseline for what life could be, right? And it's like, think about an example of, you know, when it's super, super hot, right? It's really hot weather and it's unbearably hot. Like imagine if you hadn't experienced, you know, the cooling effect of air conditioning, right? It wouldn't be so unbearable, right? The heat, because you don't know what air conditioning or getting out of that heat feels like, because that's just what it is, right? So it's the same thing with life and death. Like if we don't accept the fact that we're going to die one day, and it is a fact, you know, I'm not being like, you know, negative or anything like this. I'm just being very factual right now, right? It's, we're going to die one day. If we don't use that and remind ourselves of this, you know, like the ancient Stoic philosophers of Greece used to say memento mori, which is remember your mortality, right? You know, that still rings true today. Things haven't changed. We're not immortal. You don't appreciate, you know, life until you really understand that it's going to end one day and we don't know when, really. So we should honor that gift of life that we're, you know, blessed to be living right now, right?
Yeah. Nah, man, it's 100% truth right there. Like you said, you're not being dark, but it's a fact, you know, everybody and yourself, you're going to die. And it's just part of the process, part of the experience. And
yeah, man,
no, I have a lot of hope that there's more to it, you know, but again, maybe that's just my conditioning, my way of coping with the idea that I will be nothing, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, more is just one of those things that you and I can see differently as well. So, you know, whatever is the thing that can help you through this life in, you know, making it and fulfilling your potential and finding your truth. Hey, man, that's a beautiful thing.
Man, well, Leslie, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. If people want to reach out personally, or if they want to get information on Finding Space and on the Hustle and Flow podcast, where can they find you?
Yeah, man. Firstly, thanks for inviting me on to your show as well. It was a pleasure to speak to you. You know, you're love speaking to people open-minded and on the same wavelength. So, yeah, it was an honor to chat with you, mate. So, really good. People can find me on my website, findingspace.co. You can touch base with me there. I'm on socials as well, Facebook and Instagram at findingspace.co. You can find out about Sean and I's new program and our other website, true-north.co. This is where we lead 10 people through a program of self-discovery and finding their own sense of what True North is. And, you know, Hustle and Flow podcast, it's available everywhere that you listen to podcasts. So yeah, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Type in the Hustle and Flow podcast and you should be able to find us there.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you again so much. And then, you know, I'm going to be having Sean on the podcast in a couple of weeks. So, but till then, yeah. I hope you take
it. Awesome, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
Of course, man. Enjoy the rest of your night. Take care.